Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. And as a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mary, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop, Cancer and the Workplace. And this is an increasingly important topic for so many of you on the call today. Now, today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations. And it really is because of that collaboration that we've been able to reach so many of you on the call today. We have on the call today over 753 participants, and you come from all over the United States. You come from large cities and small cities, from rural and suburban and frontier communities. And we also have international participants from Canada, China, Jamaica, India, Korea, South Africa, Saudi Arabia, Syria, Tanzania, in the United Kingdom. So you really come from all over the world as a really group of information seekers. I would like to turn your attention for a moment to all the materials that you received from Cancer Care. In those materials is information about the topics that our speakers will be covering. There also is information about all of the different collaborating organizations as resources for you. And there is an evaluation form, and I would ask you each to complete that form and return that to us. You actually are our best advisors about the topics that we should be offering in these programs. You really know, you live the experience, you know what we should be offering, what you would find helpful. So please tell us what you would like us to do, and we'll try very hard in the ensuing months to try to implement the programs that you recommend and the topics that you suggest. This program today was made possible by an unrestricted educational grant from Novartis Oncology, and I really want to thank them for their support of this program. We have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to start by introducing our first speaker, Dr. Ruth Oratz. Dr. Oratz is with the Women's Oncology and Wellness Practice. She's Associate Professor of Clinical Medicine, New York University School of Medicine. And Dr. Oratz is going to be addressing managing your cancer treatments while working, advances in cancer treatments and side effect management, and talking with your healthcare team about your work. It's my pleasure to turn the program over to Dr. Oratz.
Thank you, Carolyn, and it's certainly my pleasure to be back on one of the Cancer Care teleconferences and to hear that so many of you have joined us today from all over the world. Once someone receives a diagnosis of cancer, everything changes. And, of course, initially, a lot of attention and energy is focused on understanding your diagnosis and getting all of the treatment plan put together. It's very, very important from the outset that you have as much information as possible, and it will take a little time to get this all together, but as much information as possible so that you understand your diagnosis and that you understand not only what type of cancer you have, but what you can expect going forward in terms of the treatment plan. The treatment plan for cancer varies very much depending on the type of malignancy that's being treated, as well as your own individual personal health and life circumstances. There are many, many components to cancer treatment, and the good news is that we have many tools available to us to treat a wide variety of malignancies. So a treatment plan may include one or some combination of all of these following modalities, perhaps surgery or radiation treatments. Chemotherapy may be indicated at some point. Some cancers are treated with hormonal agents, which could be pills or injections. And then we have a whole host of new targeted biologic therapies, again, which are either given as injections or infusions or orally in pill form. So a treatment plan for cancer can involve many different modalities that may be sequenced depending on the type of malignancy and whatever else is going on in your health. In formulating the treatment plan, it's very, very important for you to understand why your doctors are recommending which modality at which time and what role each of those modalities plays in helping you get better from your cancer. And also be sure to ask what the options are, because very often there is, as I often say, more than one right answer to this question. There are many ways we can treat any given type of cancer. So it's important to understand what your doctors are recommending in the treatment plan and what other options may be available. Try to get a handle on what each component of therapy is contributing to the overall treatment plan and how those different modalities will be integrated together. Once you have an idea of the program, and it may be, for example, that you're going to have surgery first and then perhaps chemotherapy or hormonal therapy or radiation therapy. Sometimes things go the other way around, where we start with the systemic therapy and then move on to local treatment. So once you have an idea of what the overarching program looks like and the time frame that that's going to be, 3 months, 6 months, 8 months, whatever, then you need to dig in with your doctors about the details of the treatment plan. What can you expect in terms of short-term side effects? And then on a more long-term basis, what would you expect in terms of recovering from those side effects? And what, if any, long-term sequelae will you be left with, symptoms that you may feel physically and other aspects of treatment that will impact your recovery from treatment? Part of your treatment plan is your treatment team. And the treatment team for cancer patients is usually a pretty big one. There are lots of doctors in many different specialties who will be involved in your diagnosis and treatment. And those will be oncologists who are surgeons, medical oncologists, radiation oncologists, as well as a number of other healthcare professionals, including nurses, oncology nurse specialists, physical therapists and occupational therapists, social workers, nutritionists, lots of people on the healthcare team, all of whom are important resources to you for information and support. And as we start talking about how we're going to help you consider working through your cancer treatment, everyone on your team will be contributing to that plan for you. And then, you know, the other component of your treatment team is your own personal support network. So it's important for your medical team to understand who's on your personal team, your family, your friends, your neighbors, community, and, of course, coworkers. So knowing that aspect of your support team will also help us formulate a good plan for how to approach the idea of working through your cancer treatment. It's important that you not only know who these people are and what they do, but everybody has to be able to communicate with one another. You, of course, are the point person. So the patient is the person who's at the center of all of this, and you're the guest of honor at this table. But we also need to know how to communicate with one another. So all of the doctors on the team should be able to share with each other their ideas and recommendations for treatment, as well as knowing how to stay in contact with you and you in contact with us easily. And that's very, very important as we look at integrating your cancer treatment into all of the other aspects of your life and, most importantly, your work. So before treatment begins, it's important that this part of the communication really focus initially on the details of the treatment regimen. How frequently will you need to go to the office or the clinic? How long will each visit be? Do you need to be there for a half hour, or is it 3 hours or 5 hours? Will you be at the clinic once a week, twice a week, or do you only have to come in once every 3 or 4 weeks? So each treatment modality will have a different schedule, and it's important, again, to ask your doctors about options, because sometimes we can alter the treatment schedule and tweak it a little bit, not compromising the efficacy of the therapy, but making the schedule a little bit more conducive to your personal schedule and your work schedule. It's important to know how far you have to travel to get to the cancer clinic, because that may impact how frequently your doctors will schedule your treatment. You should also know, in addition to the cancer treatment that's required at the time of your visit to the clinic, what else needs to happen as part of your treatment. Do you need to take medication at home before you come in? We call that pre-medication. Will you need to take any medicines after your treatment? For example, anti-nausea medicines, or sometimes injection of growth factors that help to maintain your blood counts, which helps to prevent infections and other complications. If you are going to need other medicines, will those be taken at home, or will they require another trip to the doctor's office or the clinic? So really get into the nitty-gritty details before your treatment begins of all of these aspects of the therapy. As we, on the medical end of things, are going through the treatment plan with you, what we need to hear from you are the nitty-gritty details about your work environment and your work requirements. So what is your work schedule? Do you work 5 days a week? Do you have the opportunity to have a flexible time schedule? Can you work part-time? Can you work from home or telecommute for part of the time? So let us know your schedule and the flexibility in that schedule. You're going to hear from other speakers later on this afternoon about how to communicate with your coworkers, your supervisors, and the people who you supervise at work. So who needs to understand how much about what's going on with you is a very important issue in thinking about working during your treatment. Your workspace environment may impact how you feel going through treatment. Do you have a place where you can close the door and have a little private time if you need to take 15 minutes to rest? We want to make sure that you're eating and drinking enough during your treatment. Make sure that's built into your workspace and your work schedule. We want to make sure that you can get back and forth from work easily and that the commute isn't too difficult or tiring for you. If there are any reasonable accommodations that need to be made in your workplace so that you can be comfortable during work, let your doctors know. And if you feel that there's something that isn't happening at work that could be helpful to you, let us know. We may be able to give you some advice or intervene and make that happen for you. Simple things like ergonomics, you know, is your chair comfortable? Is your keyboard at the right height? Is your office well lit? Is there enough ventilation and fresh air, so on. So let us know all of that information. Utilize the entire healthcare team. You'll be talking to your doctors, but certainly the nurses who work with you have a vast, vast, vast wealth of information about managing the side effects of treatment and about things that you can do to make your experience more tolerable and hopefully less uncomfortable for you. Your social worker may also have some very good ideas for you, and Pat is going to address this later on, about how to interface with your support team, your medical team, and also your team at work and your personal team at home. If you do need special equipment at home or other accommodations, that's another area where your social worker can be helpful to you. We can also help with transportation if that's an issue. So as the treatment program begins, and hopefully we've communicated all this information to one another so that we can tailor the treatment plan to be, number one and foremost, effective for treating the cancer, but also one that fits in to your personal lifestyle and life requirements at home and at work. Once treatment has started, it's important that communication continue. So you need to be open and forthcoming with us about how you feel. Don't hesitate to let your doctors and nurses know any and all side effects that you're experiencing. They may or may not be related to the treatment. We'll figure that out with you. But if you do notice something and you're not sure about it, if you feel that you are overly fatigued or that you have developed a fever or that there's pain somewhere, let us know about that. It's very important that we sort out what's related to treatment and where we can make adjustments to perhaps ameliorate, to improve those side effects for you. Share your emotional concerns with us also, and this is as much about relationships at work as about relationships at home. Treatment takes a very big toll on you physically and emotionally, and this will also impact your ability to continue working during your cancer treatment. Ask us how we can modify the treatment plan if necessary, if you're eligible for services that could help you out at home and relieve some of those responsibilities, if you need help with childcare. Talk to us about what you can do in terms of taking control of your own physical well-being, diet, exercise, getting enough rest, making sure that you're doing everything possible to enhance your well-being, again, so that you'll tolerate treatment well and also hopefully be able to continue to work through your treatment. It's important that when we consider working through cancer treatment, that we really individualize this plan. We are hopeful and optimistic that many of you will be able to continue to work during treatment. But we also know that there are some treatments which may take you out of the workplace temporarily or for a longer period of time. So be sure to communicate with your human resources personnel department about opportunities for flexible time, short-term leave of absence or disability, long-term disability if that's required, or part-time arrangements. So flexibility with your work program is important because we may need to make some adjustments around that. It's important for you to know that our treatment options have expanded greatly, but even though we're much better at minimizing side effects and managing the toxicity of treatment, there are some treatments and some individuals who are going through treatment where really you just don't feel well enough to work. So let us know that, and we will do the best we can to accommodate from all ends. To ensure the best outcome from your cancer treatment, we sometimes have to say, we can't be flexible about this. This is what you must do. You know, if there's a certain operation you need and there are 4 weeks of recovery after that surgery, we just have to go ahead and take those 4 weeks. But that's where the communication piece is so important, and make certain that we know the options that you have. Again, once treatment has started, we'll tell you about the side effects that you can anticipate, common side effects that people experience during treatment for cancer, especially after recovering from surgery or chemotherapy, include fatigue, and fatigue is both physical and mental. There may be some nausea and other GI distress, perhaps some irregularity of the bowels, whether that's constipation or diarrhea, and we can often tell you if you can predict that that may or may not happen and then try and prevent those side effects or give you tips on how to improve them if they do show up. Hair loss, of course, is a very, very important side effect that should not be minimized. You know, losing your hair is a very, very, very big change. And as people go through the experience of a new cancer diagnosis and cancer treatment, it's possible for a lot of what you're experiencing to be kept private. But losing your hair is something that does, for many people, become a very public statement in a way of what you've been going through. So being prepared for that in advance is very, very important. And make sure that your healthcare team lets you know whether or not you will be losing your hair so that you can be prepared for that. If you have a job where you're out in the public very often or communicating with other people is important, you certainly want to be prepared for that. And we have lots of tips about how you can really look your best as you're going through treatment as well. Sometimes treatment can be associated with other types of physical discomfort, tingling or neuropathy or pain or so on. Let us know if you're experiencing that. And again, we can be creative in trying to deal with that pain, not necessarily always meaning you have to take lots of pain medicines. There are other techniques that can be very helpful, including some of the complementary interventions like acupuncture and massage therapy and so on. So be sure to talk to us and use the whole healthcare team. Again, talk to us about how you're doing emotionally. It's not uncommon for people to feel depressed or sad or anxious or a little bit isolated once they learn that they have a diagnosis of cancer. Talk to us about that. Again, there might be medicines that help, or there might be other healthcare professionals who you can talk with who can help you with the side effects of treatment and of the diagnosis. Managing the side effects of treatment while you're continuing to work include not only the medicines that we give you for managing side effects, but I can't emphasize enough how important it is that you feel that you're taking an active role in your well-being. So knowing how to manage your diet, when to get enough rest, what kind of physical activity that you should be participating in are all very important aspects of treatment. And I just want to now talk a little bit about what happens once treatment is finished. So if there's a set treatment plan and your doctor says at the end of 4 months we'll be done with this treatment, well, that's true, but that doesn't mean that the next day you'll be feeling exactly the way you felt 4 months earlier before you started treatment. So remember that there is a recuperation period even after treatment has ended. There are the short-term side effects, which will hopefully get better very quickly, but there is also a period of longer-term recovery until you really get back to feeling yourself again. And that's going to vary greatly depending not only on where you started out and your other health conditions and how healthy you were in the first place, but, you know, what kind of treatment you've been through, if you've had surgery or chemotherapy or hormonal therapy. So we have to think about short-term and long-term recovery. You should also have an idea from your doctors about what the plans are for follow-up and surveillance. How frequently will you need to come in for checkups or have follow-up scans, x-rays, blood tests? Again, so that we can accommodate your schedule and fit it in with your treatment plan and follow-up plan in a way that makes sense. I'm just going to throw a few little questions out there, which maybe we'll get to later on, and hopefully you'll have some answers from the other speakers. But some of the things that come up are issues around, is it safe for you to work during treatment? And that's where you have to communicate with us about what it is that you're doing in your job, and is it actually safe for you to continue working through your treatment? Is it safe to travel? Another important question, if travel is a big part of your job. Should work take priority over everything else during treatment? And that's, again, where we need to weigh in all of those different aspects of life and prioritize them for you. Again, make sure that you ask us about different treatment options and that we all keep an open mind about being flexible not only about the treatment plan, but about how we can make adjustments in your workplace and at home to try and keep your life as integrated as possible as you go through your cancer treatment. So I'm going to stop here and turn the program back to Carolyn, and I'll be back with you in the Q&A.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Oritz. It was really, really extraordinary, wonderful presentation, and very informative and really covering a lot of such important issues for everyone to think about on the call as it applies to each person on this call today. So thank you. And our next speaker is Deborah Wolf. Deborah is an attorney. She's a senior attorney, Legal Health, New York Legal Health Assistance Group, or called NILAC. And She is going to address understanding your legal rights in the workplace, very important topic, disclosure and communication with coworkers and supervisors, and practical solutions to address workplace challenges. It's my pleasure to turn the program over to Deborah.
Thank you, Carolyn. I'm happy to participate in this teleconference to talk about legal rights in the workplace and disclosure. As Dr. Orritz said, it's important that you have as much information as possible, and that also includes an overview of the laws that protect people in the workplace while working, and also if you need to take a medical leave. I'm going to be focusing on federal laws that apply to all 50 states, but I urge everyone listening to also become familiar with your state laws, as they often expand on the federal laws, and I'll give some examples as we go forward today. I'm going to begin with a law that I'm sure most of you have heard of, the Americans with Disabilities Act, or as often called the ADA. And again, this is a law that applies to all 50 states and to everyone who works for an employer with 15 or more employees. A disability under the Americans with Disabilities Act is defined as having an impairment as a result of your diagnosis that substantially limits major life activity. So cancer will be covered under the ADA if, as a result, it limits a major life activity such as walking, working, eating, or sleeping, just to name a few. The ADA was recently amended to give a much broader definition of what is considered a disability and also now includes illnesses that have gone into remission such as cancer or other illnesses such as multiple sclerosis. The ADA has two main benefits. The first benefit is that it requires an employer to make a reasonable accommodation when requested by an employee. So basically, an employee can go to human resources or their boss if there's no human resources and say, I have cancer, I can do my job, but I need you to accommodate me in this certain way. Now, what's reasonable under the law is really determined on a case-by-case basis, but the employer must allow the accommodation unless it's an undue hardship for them, but that's a very tough burden for the employer to establish. So some of the common accommodations that I've assisted my clients with setting up include a later start in the morning due to the side effects of their medications, a shorter work day. For some clients, even working at home, if they have a job where they might be able to conduct some of their job duties at home, such as a graphic artist. I recently helped a teacher who requested a classroom closer to the bathroom as an accommodation. I urge people when they call me about accommodations to think about what would help them in the workplace. And again, it's determined on a case-by-case basis. Now, the employer can't refuse. They can't say, I'm not going to do this. What they can say, perhaps, is this isn't going to work for me, but let's talk about what's going to work for both of us. It has to be an interactive process. And the employee is the person who has to request the accommodation. The employer's not allowed to come to someone and say, you know, you look like you're struggling at work. Do you have a disability or do you have an illness or do you need an accommodation? On-the-job medical inquiries by employers have to be job-related. So asking if they have an employee, asking their employee if they have a disability is prohibited under the ADA under most circumstances. Now, the accommodation request should be made in writing, and I always urge people to have a letter of support from their doctor, as Dr. Orritz mentioned, certifying that the accommodation is medically necessary. And the right to an accommodation is a continuing right, so that if somebody sets up an accommodation and then says, well, this isn't really working for me, or I need something a little different or a little bit more, it's a continuing obligation of the employer to continue to interact with the employee to find an accommodation that's going to work for them. Now, the second benefit of the Americans with Disabilities Act is that it prohibits discrimination against an employee because of a disability or a perceived disability. So if a person is able to do their job and they have an accommodation in place or they need some time off, an employer can't take action that adversely affects their job, such as a termination or a demotion. And also, an employer can't refuse to hire somebody solely because they have a disability or an illness. So even with this law, discrimination does exist. And if somebody's working and believes that they're being discriminated against because of their cancer diagnosis, they should first try to resolve with human resources. I mean, human resources, an organization that's trained to understand what an employee's rights are and what the employer's obligations are. If you're unable to resolve with HR, then a complaint can be filed with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, or the EEOC, and generally that complaint is required to be filed within 180 days, but that also varies by state law. And the EEOC will investigate the complaint to determine if it has merit. And this is one area in which I suggest you check your state laws, because, for example, in New York, our city and state human rights law mirror the ADA and actually give broader protections and apply to employers with four or more employees. And it includes the obligation to give reasonable accommodations, so it actually offers protections to a broader group of employees. Second law that I'm going to mention is the Family Medical Law Act, or FMLA, which applies to employers with 50 or more employees. In order to be covered under the FMLA, you have to have worked at your job for at least 12 months. And if so, you're entitled to 12 weeks of job-protected leave. So if you need to take extended time off for treatment or to recover from surgery, you have 12 weeks where your job is protected and you know that you have a job to return to. It's unpaid leave, and benefits such as health insurance must continue during this 12-week period, although if you pay a portion of your benefits, you have to continue paying whatever portion you regularly pay. One important thing about FMLA that a lot of people don't know is that it also allows for what's called intermittent leave, which is a leave for, could be for a few hours a week for treatment or for doctor's visits. So, for example, a person can request leave under the FMLA every other Thursday afternoon if all your sick time has been used up for treatment or follow-up or doctor visits. And you have up to 12 weeks of intermittent FMLA as well, so that can actually accrue to quite a extended period of time where your job will be protected even if you need to take additional time off for treatment or doctor's visits. And that's an excellent benefit for somebody who's used up their sick time and is worried about either losing their job or are even being threatened by a coworker or a supervisor because they've been out sick too often. Now, with the ADA I mentioned, you can only request an accommodation for yourself. With FMLA, you can also request time off to care for a family member, such as a spouse or a child. Now, if you work for a smaller company, less than 50 employees, so that you're not covered under FMLA, time off can also be as an ADA accommodation. And again, it has to be reasonable, but there's no clear guidelines. It's on a case-by-case basis. So even if you work for a smaller employer, you may be able to request additional time off as a reasonable accommodation if you've used up your sick leave. So I want to talk for a bit about disclosure and communication with coworkers and supervisors. Disclosure, I always say, is a very personal choice, and we all have the right to determine who and under what circumstances we want to disclose our health issues or our cancer diagnosis. Now, under the ADA, when applying for a job, an employer is not allowed to ask any medical questions. But once working, I always urge caution when disclosing, making the determination to disclose to coworkers or supervisors. And my advice is generally only to disclose when required, and that's usually when requesting an ADA accommodation or under the Family Medical Leave Act. And I know other people disagree with me on that, but you know, I've talked to many, many people who do disclose and as a result, you know, feel that there is some discrimination. So I just urge people to be very cautious in who they disclose to. If you must disclose, again, go to Human Resources if available because they understand these laws. Many supervisors do not and really have to be educated by Human Resources about what your rights are in the workplace. Again, I always urge that you include a letter of medical support from your doctor. The medical information should remain confidential and in a separate file outside of your employee file that's not available to anybody in the workplace except on a need-to-know basis. So if your supervisor wants to take a look in your personnel file, let's say to look at a past performance review, no medical information should be in that file. It should be in a separate confidential file. And finally, practical solutions to address workplace challenges. I mean, I think the first and most important solution is to make sure that you understand your benefits. Your employer must give you what's called a summary plan description, which is a summary of all of your benefits. And it's very important to understand exactly what your employer's time off policies are, their sick time policies. Many employers and unions offer more generous time off policies than under FMLA or the ADA. Second is to use Human Resources or talk to an attorney if you feel you're being discriminated against, to be proactive to avoid any adverse action as a result of the discrimination. Again, coworkers and supervisors often have to be educated about the laws that I've talked about, and that's the role of Human Resources to make sure that they're abiding by, you know, their responsibilities under the law. Third would be to think about any accommodations under the Americans with Disabilities Act that might help you in your job, and seek a letter of medical support from your doctor. Again, it's determined on a case-by-case basis. There's no set list of accommodations, and it really is just a personal thought process about, you know, what's going to help me as I, you know, get through treatment and try and stay in my job and keep working. And then finally, as I mentioned, to think carefully about who you might disclose to in the workplace and under what circumstances. I know this is a lot of information, and I encourage listeners to take the time to educate themselves about these laws. This is a good first step, but, you know, they do offer protection, and to seek out resources such as cancer care to have a better understanding of your rights and responsibilities, you know, as you work through treatment or even when deciding to, you know, take a brief medical leave. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much, Deborah. It was a wonderful presentation. Just as always, you're so informative and so really terrific in terms of informing people about all their rights in the workplace and all the issues to consider. And I think excellent in terms of the communication issues as well. So thanks, Deborah. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you. Our next speaker is Kate Sweeney, and Kate is Executive Director, Cancer and Careers, Cosmetic Executive Women's Foundation. And Kate is really going to address with all of you tips to create a plan to continue working. And I now turn the program over to Kate.
Thank you, Carolyn. So the first step to creating a plan, a successful plan to continue to work, is to begin gathering the information on, as Ruth and Deborah covered, the medical and legal information about your rights. And then there's the work information. And so this is the time to dig out your employment contract, your employee handbook that you threw away the first day of work. If you're in a union, your union contract. If there's a company intranet, that's a great resource. So you need to get information on your insurance support, your company policies, any workplace flexibilities that might be open to you, their policy on medical leave, time off. Sometimes companies have leave banks where other employees donate their excess vacation time to employees who have used up all their vacation time. What are your vacation policies, your paid time off policies, if your company has that? And then take a really realistic look at your job demands during this period. What is your work schedule going to be like? Are you going to have to travel during that time? What are the projects? What are going to be sort of the hot spots and hot areas during that time? And once you gather all that information, then you can put together a plan of action of how you'll handle the work, when you'll be out, any schedule changes. You need to tell your boss about all of those if you decide to disclose. How and when to reach you when you're out, who will cover the work, what accommodations that you'll need. So an example of a game plan might be, I have radiation every day, Monday through Friday, for the next 5 weeks at 8:30 a.m. So I'd like to work from 10 to 6 instead of 9 to 5. So I'll have Susan, say, answer my phones from 9 a.m. till 10 a.m. until I get in. So the key with a game plan is to demonstrate that you're being proactive, you're thinking of the situation through, and that you have a plan. Another strategy is to identify a point person, and this is someone that you trust who's willing to be your centralized source of information about you, your health, your schedule. And your point person also saves you from having to constantly answer that question of how you're feeling every day and can update everybody on your progress. And your point person can also be your go-to person to find out about what's going on at the office. Then you want to think about modifying your workspace. You want to think about everything that you can do to make your workspace more comfortable and productive, and modify as needed. So simple things like setting up your workspace so you don't have to expend any excess energy, like bringing your phone and your fax and your files within easy reach. Maybe if you're going to be having trouble bending down, maybe move the files to the top of the file cabinet so you don't have to do the bending. Special furniture requests, like a stool to sit on if you're behind a counter all day, a special chair that's maybe more comfortable, a backrest, temporary assignment switches, if you're on a retail floor, could you be in the back office for this period so you don't have to walk around and stand as much? Your desk, you might want to ask if that could be near to the bathroom or away from the kitchen if the smells will make you nauseous during this time. And it can really help to get a letter of medical necessity for chairs and equipment, and your doctor can help you with that, and that can ease the process. Another option is to consult an occupational therapist if that's available. So then you want to think about modifying your schedule, and that's going to be different for everybody. Obviously, a teacher can't telecommute, but what you want to do is the trick is to be really creative and logical when you present the solutions to your employer. So some strategies to think about are working from home, either part or full time, to eliminate a draining commute or let you lie down when necessary. And the key in that kind of thing is really to structure the arrangement beforehand, set the hours when you're working, how you'll be reached, what are your equipment needs, do you need files, a computer, a dedicated phone line. You could also work a full-time but a flexible schedule, so you vary the start and end time of your workday. So you could take time out during the day to go to appointments, and make the time up either later that day or later in the week. Scheduled breaks throughout the day can allow you to rest and sit down. Another strategy is to, when you finish treatment, you know, you might not be feeling 100%, but you can work a part-time schedule and then ramp up as you're feeling better. And again, all of those suggestions are just, you know, would depend on the type of work that you do. One of the biggest questions that we hear a lot and have questions about is maintaining focus, how you can stay focused and concentrate through all of this. So a few on-the-job strategies are to forget multitasking, write down a list of priorities, then turn off your email or phone and focus on your list and do one thing at a time. Write everything down so you always have a record. Take it with you. We had one patient who labeled the number of her cell phone on her cell phone and on her work phone. It was just one less thing for her to remember. ban clutter and clear your desk or work area, it can really be amazing what kind of visual impact that can do for the psyche and give you a real sense of control of your space. Really, it's about taking a moment to get out of your head and into a calmer place. So whatever you can do to get up, move your body, take a walk, and change your environment for a little bit can really help. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Kate. Wonderful presentation and just lots of really helpful tips for everybody and actually very sound wisdom. So thank you very much. Our next speaker is Patricia Spicer, and Pat is an oncology social worker, and she is a coordinator at Cancer Care. And Pat is going to review with you the services that you can access from Cancer Care as well as the importance of a support network. Pat?
Thank you, Carolyn. It's exciting to know we have people from all over the world on the call today, and it's always a pleasure to do one of these programs. Returning to the workplace, whether it's during the course of your treatment or after cancer treatment, presents many issues. Our work provides us with a sense of purpose and identity and practical concerns like readjusting our salaries and our health care benefits. And so the loss of some of those roles can impact about how we feel about ourselves. It can also be a positive step. It can signal a return to the sense of normalcy on the path to recovery. But before you begin to think about going back to work, as Dr. Orath said, it's important to talk with your medical team to make clear to them what your job is about, and sometimes we tend to just give a gloss over. So your doctor and medical team needs to know, it, particularly for a woman who has had lymph node dissection, does it entail heavy lifting or moving heavy objects so that they can be aware of the concern for lymphedema? If you are experiencing neuropathy, is that going to affect your ability on your computer keyboard? So those are things that you need to discuss with them before you begin returning to work. You also need to be honest with your team and with yourself about your level of energy. Can you go back to work full time, or is it better to start off at a slower rate and maybe start going part-time? The suggestion about maybe going in a little later in the morning and leaving a little earlier in the afternoon is a good one and something you should discuss with your employer and medical experts. You might also want to give them a few moments to think about your emotional well-being. Going through treatment or the finishing treatment presents emotional issues all their own, and that kind of issue needs to be taken into consideration when you think about returning to your work role. So make sure that you have thought carefully with yourself and with your family about what the impact of your going back is going to be. One of the tips that patients have told us as they go back is that they have used either email or phone contact with some of their coworkers to kind of reintroduce themselves into the area of the workplace and to find out about changes or updates in technology that have taken place while they have been away. It's also a good idea to remember, as we have said, that reasonable accommodation is important, and don't hesitate to speak with your employer or the human resource director if that is necessary. If you have additional questions or concerns, or you'd just like to talk to someone about some emotional support, we're here at Cancer Care to offer that service. You can contact us by calling 1-800-813-4673, which is our toll-free number, or reaching us online at www.cancercare.org. We look forward to hearing from you and to offering you support. Thank you, Carol.
Well, thank you very much, Pat, for really your eloquence and for really going into some more details about workplace issues. So thank you very much and for reviewing our services at Cancer Care. And now we do have time for questions. We have lots of time for questions. I'm going to ask Mary to bring all of our speakers on board. And why don't we, Mary, would you explain to people how to queue up for questions? And we'll try to take as many as possible. Given the large number of you on the call, if we do not get to your question, please do call Cancer Care at the end of the program, and we'll be happy to take your questions at that point. Mary?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press star then one on your touch tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Our first question comes from Lorraine F.
Yes, I was wondering if I could get any help with copays that I had to pay.
Excellent question. Carolyn, yes.
Carolyn, maybe we could address that because in some instances through the Cancer Care Copay Foundation, we may be able to provide some help with that. So the number is the 1-800 number that I gave previously, 1-800-813-4673, and in some instances we can be of help.
And actually, there are a number of copay foundations, of course, throughout the country, and so we can help with some things, and we also can connect you with other copay assistance programs as well. So, actually, why don't you and I talk after the program, and we'll be sure, Lorraine, to connect you up with one of our staff here as well. Thank you for the question. And that's true for everyone on the call. Indeed, anyone who is struggling with financial issues, please be aware that Cancer Care does assist with financial questions and concerns. We actually provide financial assistance in particular situations, so no one should not be able to get the best care. We do feel very strongly about helping you to be sure to get the best care with all the different financial assistance programs that are available throughout the country. Our next question?
Our next question comes from Marla A.
Hi. Thank you so much for having this session. I lost my job when I had to go in for treatment. So my question is, when I'm interviewing for a company, how do I express the need to continue my monthly appointments and also let them know that I get chemo treatments a few times a year?
Okay, that's an excellent question, Marla. So that I'm going to ask Deborah in terms of in the interview process for someone who's looking for a new job. I think, do you want to go over a little bit about the issue of privacy of this medical information?
Sure. I mean, under the ADA, they have like a three-tiered level of disclosure requirements. When somebody is interviewing for a job, the employer is not allowed to ask any medical questions at all. It's not allowed to ask about health history. What I suggest is that somebody work at getting their job, and then once they have the job, then to go back, and you can do it the day after you're hired, and that's when you set up your reasonable accommodations and say, you know, there's certain accommodations that I'm going to need from you. Here's what they are. I mean, it's a tough time looking for work right now for everybody. And sometimes when employers are faced with many different candidates, you know, that could very well be a factor that they, even though they're not really supposed to, that they would take into consideration. So my suggestion would be to get the job, then set up the accommodations. I just want to mention that when somebody is applying for jobs, once they've been offered a job, that job offer can be conditioned on filling out medical questionnaires. The key is that they have to ask every new hiree coming into that position the same information. They can't look at one person and say, well, I'm curious about this person's health, so I'm going to make them a conditional job offer. It has to be a policy of the company. So once somebody's offered a job, the employer has the right to ask medical questions. The key is, though, if in response to those questions they learn that you have cancer, they're prohibited from withdrawing their job offer. So you're still protected even under the second tier where an employer does have the right to ask questions. But during the initial interview, there should be no questions asked about your health history.
And actually, Deborah, would you say a few words, because there are a number of organizations like yours and like NILAC throughout the country that really do offer people all kinds of legal services without a cost. And would you just talk about that just in general, so that a little bit about NILAC and a little about
sure,
the concept
sure.
of this?
I'm I belong to a group of legal service organizations that have specific cancer advocacy projects. They have them, I don't want to say in all 50 states, but many states. So there really are some wonderful resources out there to help people with these issues. There's also a wonderful organization called the Job Accommodation Network, or JAN, who have a wonderful website that talks about how to set up accommodations, gives people examples of letters to write, talks about, you know, typical accommodations, and it's illness-based, so somebody can look at their particular diagnosis and look at some of the accommodations that might help them in the workplace. But there are a lot of organizations out there, such as NILAG, where I work, and again, you know, I urge everybody to make sure that you understand not only the laws I've talked about, but in your individual state as well, so that you understand all the protections that you have.
I'd like to, this is Dr. Orak, I'd like to add another great resource, and Kate, you could chime in here. The Cancer and Careers website also has a lot of great information and will link you to some of these other sources of information. Kate, do you want to expand on that a little bit?
Sure. One of our best resources is free career coaching, which is available on our website, cancerandcareers.org. So if you're looking to change jobs or you have career coaching questions, you can ask our career coaches free of charge. But I wanted to just go back, even though the law says that a potential employer can't ask you about your health, it doesn't mean that they don't. So one of the things that we just suggest is that you have a ready answer, and it doesn't have to be that you have cancer or anything like that, but that if someone does ask you, you know, about your health, or if you had cancer, you know, you can say, I had a health issue in the family, whatever answer works for you, but just have it ready and be practiced, because sometimes it does come up, even though the law says it shouldn't.
And Deborah, do you want to comment on that, the fact that sometimes the interviewers do not know the law themselves?
Well, sometimes they don't know it, and sometimes they do know it, and they ignore it. But, yes, I certainly agree with what Kate said in terms of being prepared, because these questions do come up. And, you know, sometimes I will, you know, tell clients, you know, just, you know, for example, if somebody asks if you're taking medications, just to assume that the question is being asked in what should be the legal way, which would be, are you taking any medications that would affect your ability to do this job? And if you feel that you can do this job, then the answer to that question is no. But I certainly agree that from time to time, you know, employers do ask these questions, even though they're not, you know, they shouldn't.
Well, Deborah, it also may be that when someone is going for a job interview and they present their resume, that there's a lapse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you worked up until 2009, and then there were 2 years when you weren't working, and that might be where the interviewer says, well, what happened in those 2 years? How come you weren't working?
And that's a perfectly legitimate and legal question. And, again, I think, you know, you have to be prepared. Some people do disclose, you know, that they had a medical condition. Some people disclose that, you know, they were in treatment for cancer. Other people focus on other things that they were doing during that time. You know, perhaps taking time off to pursue a hobby, or, you know, taking a class. I mean, I'd say stress. If you don't want to talk too much about your medical diagnosis, then to stress other things that you've been doing during that time, whether it's, you know, taking care of family or pursuing other interests. Again, it's a really personal decision about disclosure, and it's a tough marketplace right now for jobs. But really, it has to be determined on a case-by-case basis what's going to be the best for you.
This is such an important discussion because actually many people, of course, do a functional resume rather than a chronologic resume.
I think many of us
work with people around doing a functional resume. So the most important takeaway from this is you probably don't want to do this on your own. Here on this call, you have representatives from different disciplines here, from a medical oncologist to social worker to law to legal representation to career coaching. Basically, and all of these services can be accessed for free, and it's most important that you actually assemble a team to help you. And I actually want to thank all of our speakers today. You've really been extraordinary. It's just been an extraordinary call today. I want to thank all of you who queued up and asked such great questions. And I also want to thank all of you who've been listening. And, you know, we recognize that when we plan a one-hour program that there are so many needs that go far beyond the scope of a one-hour program. And with that in mind, I do want to reiterate, of course, to all of you that Cancer Care has a staff of 50 master's-level trained oncology social workers, and that we are here to provide a host of services for you, from practical and financial assistance to counseling. We have support groups both on the telephone and online. We have over 27 online support groups. We also have a lot of materials and booklets and fact sheets. We have a number of these type of workshops that we offer throughout the year, actually. And, of course, we have a very active website. Most importantly, we wouldn't want anyone to feel that when this call ends that you're on your own. We don't want you to feel you're alone in coping with cancer. We want you to know that you're now part of a community of support, and Cancer Care is simply a telephone call away at 1-800-813-HOPE. And if any of you had a question or wanted to continue your dialogue with us, please feel free to call us, because we have staff here who are quite able to help you with these issues, and these services are all free. So I want to thank you all for participating today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may disconnect and have a wonderful day.